Hi, and welcome to Happiness Through Hardship, the podcast, where we share positive stories and suggestions about finding hope, resources, and connections to help us all get through hard times. I'm Karen Sullivan, a mom, an author, and a stage 4 cancer patient who's always looking around me for inspiration. I believe in surrounding myself with people and experiences that make me smile. And that's what I'm hoping to do for you today. So grab your favorite drink, get cozy, and let's get started. I am so excited to introduce you to Katie McElroy. Katie's an ambitious and dedicated 20-something. She's a self-starter with an enthusiasm for technology, who's worked for high-profile brands in digital strategy, sales, partnerships, and client relations. Katie's also a seasoned presenter, speaking on many panels representing digital platforms, especially everyone's favorite TikTok. Now, I hired Katie 6 years ago on a project basis as she was finishing graduate school. She was looking for a job in New York City, and her challenge was that she needed a visa, as she was, and still is, a resident of Ireland. I remember hearing some of the challenges she faced in the job search and managing life as she navigated the move to a different country. Now, as many people are curious about traveling, or more so living overseas, or even thinking about, could this be an opportunity for our kids? I wanted Katie to join me in a conversation to discuss the benefits of living overseas and share some steps on how to do it. Now, I know if this is new to you or it just seems so far away that it can be really stressful. So I just wanted to talk about the possibilities, knowing that we are here to talk about finding the joy in whatever journey may go on for ourselves or our families in life. So Katie, welcome. I'm so glad to see you and have you here with me.
I know. Thank you so much for having me. I just cannot believe we were working together 5-6 years ago. It feels closer, but you know, it's crazy few years. But yeah, I'm so excited to be here.
Well, thank you. It is really weird to think 6 years ago, not only Katie and I before this, as we're speaking, she works for TikTok. We were talking about like, ooh, does Pretty Wellness or Happiness Through Hardship have a TikTok channel? And you know, I love Instagram. Pretty Wellness has been on Instagram, and how that digital landscape has just changed tremendously in these 5-6 years. And, you know, even how what our habits are personally, not just for work, you see people taking a lot more video. Any event you're at, sporting event, fun event, like it's not just pictures anymore. It's the full-fledged video. So it was fun to think about even, you know, how we did our business together. I mean, this is a few years before COVID. So, you know, where we were meeting at the library or at my house or in my home office just to do the work. Now, with my interns, even though one of them is local, the other one is at my alma mater, Miami of Ohio, but both of them, we do it remotely because we can. And that's what makes this podcast so fun, is that Katie's in Ireland right now and I'm in Connecticut, and it's the same day, but, you know, 6 hours ahead of me. You're 6 hours ahead of me, right?
Five hours behind. Yeah. It is really interesting that you say that. I mean, I do work at TikTok at the moment. And one of the things that I do when I present is I put 2018 up on the screen and I say, what happened in 2018? And sometimes can get some funny responses, but what actually happened was TikTok launched in the UK. Now, as we're going to talk about, moved to New York in August of 2018. And I remember in the first job I was in, probably into 2019, my manager talking about this thing called TikTok at the time. And I was like, oh no, just hadn't even thought about being on it. So it is funny now, God, nearly five and a half years down the line, to think that that's what my career and job in Ireland has ended up being, on a platform that I hadn't even used. And the evolution of video. And I think the real thing, and it's probably come out of the pandemic, and video is very, you know, you can't edit it too much. Of course you can edit the video, but you're really capturing life in the moment. And I think it's that authenticity and the realness that maybe we're all trending towards wanting more of as well. And we've seen the rise of video. So yeah, I'm sure we're going to see Happiness Through Hardship and Pretty Wellness on TikTok someday soon. But it's definitely been an interesting evolution to see the video come into play. Now, my own TikTok is a work in progress, but I'm trying myself.
Isn't it funny when you're representing somebody else? I don't want to say it's easy work, definitely not. But in ways, it can be easier when you're than when you're doing your own, you know, personal work. And I've definitely found that through some of the work I've done outside of my own brands. It seems easier because there are many reasons for it. But I want to pedal back a little bit. And I just want you to give us a little snapshot about you, your life, how you made the decision to leave home, why, and where it all began.
Yeah, so I'm from Omagh in County Tyrone, which is in Northern Ireland. So very center really of Northern Ireland, like an hour and a half from Belfast and 3 hours from Dublin. So went to school there all the way up through to 18. And I always knew for university I wanted to go away. I didn't want to stay in Northern Ireland. I would have stayed within Ireland and gone to Dublin, but the way the system works, it's quite challenging. So I set my sights on the UK and I went to Newcastle University. Now, Geordie Shore was big at the time. You guys had Jersey Shore. They brought it to the UK and launched Geordie Shore, which I had a very reputable image. But I don't think that's why I went to Newcastle, but I'm sure
that's hilarious.
A little bit of a part for the nightlife. But so I suppose I moved away then at 18 to Newcastle. I'd been once or twice on a plane just, you know, to do the open days. I got a really good feeling. I think it's something that I've really stuck with. Sometimes you land somewhere and you just like it, and you just, and sometimes it can just be the series of events that happen, you know, someone's nice to you on the metro or whatever. But it was a city that I really loved quite quickly. And even walking around the university, I just got a feeling for it. And I was like, I can really see myself here. So luckily I got in and I moved away. So I suppose that was my first taste of, you know, leaving home, moving away from parents. And it was definitely hard. There was a lot of tears, I think. And it is quite similar, I suppose, to when I left for New York a couple of years later. But the goodbyes in the airport have always been awful. Like, I really hate them. I wouldn't be a huge crier, but when it comes to saying I couldn't even speak, like can't speak, you know, because I just am going to burst into tears. But over the 4 years there, I really grew. And it was interesting talking to my dad. And I know we're going to talk about parents and, you know, what that feeling must be like for them, seeing me go so far away. But there was a point where I was nearly going home a lot. And my dad just had a really frank conversation with me. And he said, you know, you can't live in two places at once. So are you going to come home or are you going to stay there, you know, for university and really give it, you know, be present in one place versus trying to, you know, when you're there, you always want to be home. And when you're home, you want to be there. So it was a really good conversation that we had about a year and a half in to the 4 years. And it did really settle me because it was like, let's just go for this. Like, what's the worst thing that can happen? You can always go home. And I ended up really, really coming into my own then after that, and only went home really every 8 or 12 weeks compared to maybe going home every 4 or 5 weeks before. So yeah, that was Newcastle. Had an absolute ball for the 4 years. And when I finished, I actually tried to go to New York then. So I would have been 21, 22, and I applied for this. It was like an exchange program where you go and you work in finance or big corporates and down in the financial district, and you needed some experience. And unfortunately I didn't get it, and I was absolutely devastated. And it was just near my final year exam. So I, you know, obviously still went through the exams and everything, but I was like, okay, what on earth am I going to do now? I'm 21, 22. I felt as if I had done a degree, yes, and we'd done a dissertation, but it was very theoretical. Like the marketing, I knew all the marketing theories and principles, but I was like, I don't feel ready to practice it. Of course, I would have been fine if I just went into work, but I decided then to go off to grad school to do my master's in Dublin. So technically moving home to Ireland, but not home, not
right,
home.
Right, right, right.
Northern Ireland. So it was definitely nicer to be back, you know, closer, you know, to only get in the car makes such a difference compared to flying home.
Right.
Yeah. You know, it is, even if it's 4 hours door to door with a plane, it's so different. Security, yeah. right, lifts and everything. So really loved that year. And then as part of, you know, the Ireland America connection, when you graduate from a university in Ireland as an Irish citizen, it's called a graduate visa. So you can go over, and it is essentially like an exchange as well. So a year or 18 months, and you can go on the visa with the expectation that you develop skills in America that then you bring back to the Irish workforce. So it was always on my mind. I was trying to think, like, why New York? But my dad spent maybe 6 to 10 years there in the 80s. And it's funny, you know, he says New York in the 80s was a very different New York to when he came to visit me in 2018. But we have, I suppose, a lot of family history there. My cousin Jane, I had spent summers with her, and, you know, she had moved over at 21 on a green card. And, you know, she's created this amazing life for herself, and she's, you know, gorgeous family, great job and career. So I suppose I knew I was going over to someone as well. I wasn't going to be totally on my own. I had Jane really close by. So I made the decision then. I think throughout grad school, I was preparing. I'm a super organized person. And I think from a top tips perspective, depending on what settles you, if you're not into, some people I know can just turn up at the airport and figure it out, and that's great. But that's not really the way that I am. So just did all my research, knew what I needed to do for visas, embassy appointments, everything. So that when I graduated in the July, I left a month later and I moved over. And that's, I think it was August 31st, 2018. I think people say you always remember the dates.
Yes, I remember the dates.
Yeah.
All right. So can you tell us a little bit about, you're very organized, mm-hmm. and you knew the things you needed to get done. What would you tell people those are? And again, I would get that this is from Ireland going to the States. Yeah. I would think that, you know, I don't want to make total assumptions, but that some of these processes would be similar for those that are going to the States wanting to go to Ireland. And again, I think it sounds like there was this program that Ireland has that you get the visa for 18 months.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And that's huge. I wonder if other countries would have it, right?
I think you do, right? So I think it depends. But it's a really relevant question, because, like, there's a lot of Irish people at the moment moving to Australia. So it's all similar. It's a similar vein, right, of preparation, because you have to start somewhere. So I think it's doing your research and finding out, like, is there a program like my one? You know, for an Irish person to go to America outside of this graduate visa, it is a lot harder. It's not impossible. So it's just figuring out what your options are, depending on if you are a recent graduate or perhaps you're further along, you know, you're in a job and you'd like to move. So again, to keep it pretty top level, it just do in your research based on your situation and getting advice from the right people and asking people who have done it. You know, LinkedIn is an amazing resource if you've seen someone you went to school with, or that you're some way familiar with, or you don't even have to be at all. Just ask them. I mean, the worst thing that could happen is they don't reply. That happens. But
right.
All you can do is ask. And then I think based on that, once you figure out what your situation is, it's just trying to get organized. You know, financially, moving abroad is definitely a financial decision as well, in terms of you need savings and you have to pay to get yourself there. You know, I arrived with 2 suitcases, you know, you pay for the extra luggage,
right?
And then you need money when you get there for security. You know, maybe you're paying your first rent up front. I know from an Australian standpoint, you need a certain amount of money in your bank account. So I think it's just finding out what all those things are and making sure you're in the best possible situation in order to go. So having your CV or resume ready, does Americans expect something different compared to what an Irish company would do? You know, again, asking questions to the people that are in your network that maybe have experienced this or you know, can offer advice. And that's what I would say for that one. The other thing is too, like, I was lucky, I lived in Fairfield, gorgeous Fairfield, Connecticut, for 2-3 months with Jane and Mark, just around the corner from Karen. And so that really helped me, because because at least then I had the security then, you know, I traveled into New York City on the train and back. So again, you need the money for the train tickets, but I didn't need to pay for rent. So I still knew I needed that money when I did move into Manhattan, but it all just depends on your situation. But I think the more organized and prepped you are, it eases it, because it is hard. It's hard leaving home, everything, you know, your parents, your friends, you know, other people can seem very settled there, and you're kind of making this really big decision. So I think having those little bits of security and preparation, at least you know you've done all that you can to set yourself up well wherever you're going, I think it's a great way to be if possible.
Was there anything that, like, let's talk about the culture, like the cultural differences. I did an interview with two women that I used to work with at Disney and ESPN. One moved to Germany, the other moved to Australia. And we talked a little bit about, you know, similar but different from this conversation. They're both mothers now. And one of them told the most hilarious story, and she is funny, about how she needed to change her pants when she got to an event, and she told the big boss that, and apparently, or whatever the word she used was, that pants really meant underpants.
Yeah.
And she's telling it this to some CEO that when she was at a networking event at, or a big boss. And again, the way she told it, it's much funnier than the way I did. But her point was, is that there are just cultural differences when you're moving. Some you like will be on the first page of a book you read, others will not. Did you find that, you know, moving to this new country, that you ever, or in the reverse, anybody who has come to Ireland, have there been things that have been just awkward, and how do you navigate that?
Yeah, so it's a really interesting question, and the way that I would think about it for me that was super relevant to the story is the when you're applying for jobs. So Irish people by nature are quite humble, and we are newly afraid of bigging ourselves up or really talking about what we think our full potential are. Is we don't blow our own trumpets. Like we're a little bit more subdued and humbled, which of course can be a nice trait. But when you are going into America, where that is not the case, it's not that everyone is, but people are a lot more upfront about what they're able to do, you know, have confidence in their ability. You are not competing at an even level. No one is going to pull it out of you that you're good at whatever else. You need to be very upfront about it and say it and sell yourself. And I think it's something, you know, working in a global org at the moment, like, you know, you see that. I work with people from North America and APAC and all over the world. And I think it's that upfrontness and directness of Americans that you need to match, really, because you're entering into their world and you need to come with that. And I think the other thing is, we Irish people feel direct. Like, I feel like a direct person. I can just say what I feel, or Karen ask you outright about, you know, something that I, you know, that maybe someone else would be like, God, I couldn't ask that. We're not really. Like, I'm not as direct as maybe even a German person. There's the German example, but Americans too. Like, there's no beating around the bush, like that Irish expression. It's just straight to it. So I think that as well, you know, just say your point. Like, you don't need to go off on a big story and then say it. And I think it was another thing is very relevant for job applications, particularly moving to America, but also now, what is it that you want as well? You know, like, as an Irish person, you're like, oh, I'm not really sure. People can't help you. And I know from like Jane had so many connections, and similar to yourself, Karen, and ESPN, Disney, like all those brilliant people that you guys had worked with over the years. And I spoke to a lot of them for informational interviews and just to talk about opportunities. And unless you could sell yourself and pretty much just ask upfront, what is it that you want? What is it that you're looking for? What is the type of job? People aren't as able to help. And that's not really just an American thing. But yeah, I would say the upfrontness and the confidence. And it's a great thing. And I think Irish people are getting better. But I think it's something that Americans are very good at, to have that.
Well, I want to jump in, though, and say that's really an interesting point. Because, I mean, I remember going informational interviews, and again, this is going to date me, but this would have been 1999 when I was looking to move, or 2000, early 2000, when I was looking to move to the East or West Coast. And I remember sitting in Madison Square Garden with one of my first business mentors, Stacy Lender's contact. And I so just wanted them to like me and want me. They asked me that question. They asked me, well, what do you really want? And I'm like, well, I like this and I like this and I like that. You know, I was so green.
Yeah.
And to your point, they, I think somewhere along the line in that trip, someone said, well, to your, exactly what you said, if we don't know what you want, we can't help you. Mm-hmm. I thought maybe if a job came up, I would just fit right into it, right? And then that was me being green. And I think now there are so many more tools for people. And this could work if you're in this country and wanting to move across the country, or it could work, or this country meaning my, you know, meaning the US, but this could also work if you live in the US and you want to move to anywhere in the world, is we have so many digital resources to actually read through job descriptions. And to, you may not know exactly what you want, but you might read through job descriptions like, oh, I like that. Oh, I think I could like that. And then have a better idea. So when you go into the informational interviews, which it sounds like were very helpful for you,
yeah,
if nothing else, to learn the nuances of various industries, of things you might be able to do in New York. And that will help people, because I know through my years, like even now, I love to do informational interviews because they help me along the way. But a lot of people, not everybody, a lot of people come really not having a lot of questions, not having a lot of knowledge, just wanting you to dump on them. And that works. But, you know, for those of you that are listening, that again, this could be, you know, in your own country or where you're moving, the more information you can figure out about what you want, or maybe specific to a company you're talking to, the better they can help you navigate that if the job is the end result that you want. And often if you're looking to move, you know, I'd like to maybe go there and say, okay, this is different somewhat from your approach. You came over here. But what would people, if they're looking for a job overseas,
yeah,
and hoping to get the visa, what might their route be, or how does that work? Are there any, I remember you having some hiccups, we'll say, when you were looking for a job here, and there were some places they really wanted you, but they didn't have a way to work in with the visa.
Yeah, yeah. So this was probably the biggest challenge there. And I think in ways I was super naive when I came over, you know, when I was thinking about this period. And that's okay too, right? Because as you said, when you are super green and you're fresh out of college and you have to learn all these things sometimes the hard way, and that's great because, you know, it's definitely shaped me and it gave me a lot at the time. But I suppose to just let people know what the process is. So whenever you come over on a graduate visa from Ireland, you don't have to have a job before you come over. So you need to get a job within 120 days. So roughly your 4 to 5 month mark. Now, my visa was only 12 months. So if you can't get a job until 5 months in, and you're looking for a full-time employment, then you've only got 7 months left. So the tricky thing with the visas is, you know, you have only got that short window, and places are looking for people probably for a couple of years. You know, maybe there's someone that'll take you for a year if you can get the full year. But that's the challenge, is it's almost like a ticking time bomb, because the longer it takes you to get the job, the less time you have available in that job. And I was always very upfront about the visa. I know other people took different tacks and maybe didn't tell the whole truth. And then sometimes that worked, sometimes it didn't. I just felt, for me, I really wanted to be honest from the start, because I think it just created a better dialogue. So they understood the full situation, because it's not the end of the road. If, you know, those 7 months ended, which I will get to, it wasn't the end of the road for me. So it was just, it's ultimately about someone taking a chance on you and taking you in. So I lived in Connecticut for the first 2 months, and I was working with Karen. I think it was probably for those first 2 months, the September, October. And then in the November time, because I knew I only had 12 months, I was like, I really need to move into New York. I really need to try and make this happen. I was applying for lots of jobs on LinkedIn at the time. In-person interviews were still very much a thing. I didn't do any virtual interviews back then, which is interesting now, right? Because you could interview from Ireland for a job in New York now.
Right, and right.
If you're in New York, you'd probably be doing them all online anyway. So a lot of in and out on the train. That's if, even if I got to the interview stage. definitely had some weird ones where it was like a pyramid scheme selling like electricity, and the interview round one was in some office and round two was in this really dodgy McDonald's somewhere on the west side of the city. So there were some stories I was like, wow, you know, I just didn't have a good feeling, but you're quite desperate. Like, I think maybe that was job 60 or 70 that I'd applied for, and I had a spreadsheet and everything. So that's the other thing, get organized, because when you're applying for that many jobs, there's absolutely no way you're going to remember which one you've applied for. So it's trying to keep a track of what you've applied for and when. So eventually all the information interviews went really well. So I was talking to people at like A&E networks, like Discovery. So it was all that media and TV world, and MTV off Times Square, all these super cool offices. And I think the one thing that I learned in that, and I was thinking about it the other day, which is connected but unconnected, you just had to walk into these massive skyscraper buildings. And this is coming from Ireland, and we don't even have skyscrapers. Go up to the reception and just say, oh, hey, I'm here to see such and such. And it's almost happening. And you're like, this is crazy. Like, I'm just walking into some office off Times Square. Like, I don't even know who I'm going to meet. So, and then all of a sudden you're in the Discovery offices or HBO office or whatever, meeting someone. So I think it's that just being thrown into the deep end. Like, my cousin Jane had helped me, but she wasn't going to sit there holding my hand and bring me to every interview, you know? So it's also when you're, you know, you're given that foot in the door necessarily, like, you have to get yourself through the door. Like, the person can't, that there's only so much that they can do. So that's another big piece of advice. You know, if people are throwing you a bone, do something with it, because otherwise they've kind of nearly put their neck on the line. And if you don't live up to that, then it's not good for them either. So the informational interviews, everyone was like, we love you. And I was like, oh, great. You know, can you give me a job? I really need one. And the visa process, again, because I was coming down to 8 months, 7 months as the time was ticking on, they're like, we can't take you on, because they would have needed to sponsor me to take me on longer. And they just said, you know, company policy, we can't do it, we can't do it. So I was getting pretty desperate at this point. I think it was like, you know, Black Friday, my first ever Thanksgiving. And I was working in a bar at the time, earning $16 an hour. And I think I was bringing home just about enough to pay my $1,400 rent and then like a few hundred dollars extra, which of course in New York is nothing.
It's like a piece of bread, yeah.
He's right. I was living off cereal from CVS and milk because cereal was so cheap. And then I'd get fed and work. So like, it was fine. Oh, like everything was fine. It's not like I was in dire straits. Again, that's where your savings and your money that you can save is really important. So I eventually spoke to HBO, got talking to two executives who were looking to replace their executive assistant. And I was like, oh my God, this is really cool. It's funny. Game of Thrones is about to come out in its final season. I did not watch Game of Thrones at the time. We binge watched it last winter. And now I'm like, this opportunity would have been even cooler knowing how big it was. But anyway, so they were looking for someone to fill in their executive assistant role. So like basically supporting the two executives with their travel, but also getting involved in initiatives internally about like working with their teams and, you know, organizing nights out. And there was like a ski trip and all this other stuff. And we'd been given the green light from both executives. Like, they were really happy to take me on. It was no issue with the visa because even though it was 7 months, because of the position, it was all fine. So this is great. I can finally relax. It was the week before Christmas. And basically because of part of the visa, they have to sign this particular paperwork. And essentially they nearly take responsibility of you for the 7 months, but whatever the legal wording is, I remember Sloan ringing me up. It was like her legal. They were trying all that they could, but they were just like, our legal team, like HBO legal team, do not like this legal and they will not be signing the document. So we were trying to find workarounds. It wouldn't happen. And then it was the Friday before Christmas. I was walking in or getting the metro in to go to work. And we call that Blackout Friday at home because everyone's normally going on a big mad night out the Friday before Christmas and it can end badly for some people. But so it's always a really, really busy night. And I was a little bit early for work. So I sat in front of Macy's, and obviously Macy's Christmas, like, and there was someone, Salvation Army singing like New York, New York, Frank Sinatra, which of course, like, when you're moving to New York, that's all you're playing, all this music. And it's so like exciting. And I just got the phone call to say, like, it's not going to happen. And we're really sorry, but this is the end of the line and we can't take you on at HBO. And I was just devastated because it was such a knock of finally getting something after nearly four months. You know, and the financial security of it, the bar was fine, but it wasn't enough money, first of all.
And you studied marketing and you wanted to get to a place. Like, we all start out, you'll start out as an executive assistant, but the hope is that you're going to grow and you're going to learn and you're going to move. And this is the right trajectory. And the way you just, the picture that you painted of being in front of Macy's and the music, and it's right before Christmas and so different than where it's still both fun, what was going on in Ireland. And that's when you got the call that's obviously, it's stressful. It's sad. You worked so hard and here you are. And I want to hear how the story ends. And I also want to ask, where is your support in all this, being in a new city? Yet, you know, I know if as a parent, what was the communication like, or how do you stay in touch?
So I've been pretty communicative with my mom and dad throughout this, but I suppose not overly prescriptive in the sense of, you know, telling them every detail of the job that I'd applied to, but they would have known, like, this is the one now, because they can relax then too, you know, because they're probably worrying, like, has she enough money? Does she need some help? Is it going to be okay? I mean, I think them knowing that Jane was so close, and I lived in Manhattan in Greenwich Village, and I really wanted to be in Manhattan, knowing that I could get to Grand Central, to get to Fairfield,
to come up to see your cousin.
So I really didn't want to be in Brooklyn because it just felt too far. It felt like, and Jane worked in Manhattan at the time, so I just knew I was like, at least being close to her. Like, if I needed something, had to get to see her, had to see family, like, that day, I can go. Like, I can just get on the subway, get on the train, and I can be in Connecticut in, you know, 2 hours. So that made a huge difference, having that support. But it was definitely a very lonely time, because I think the way that I am is, like, I'm definitely one of those, like, type A, like, high achievers. Like, I really wanted to make this work. And obviously all the times that you're daydreaming about living in New York and seeing all these people, you know, working really hard and their corporate outfits and, like, going for drinks after work and everything. And that's what you envision, of course. And I think it was a real reality, like, things aren't always going to work out the way that you want them to, and that's okay as well. So I think the communication was there. Jane knew what was going on, my parents knew what was going on, but there was definitely, I probably tried to hide the emotions as well. You know, there's definitely probably tears behind closed doors, but I think I probably knew, it was like, it's going to happen. Like, it'll happen. And if I have to go home after the 120 days, I mean, I've given it everything. So I suppose, and this is where it's funny, like, then we went off to the Caribbean for a week at Christmas. So, like, you know, it wasn't all that bad. When you look back, of course, I really wanted the job before I went to the Caribbean, but came back and I was like, right, this is it. New Year's Eve, like, got to get this job. Just keep going. Because I definitely figured out, you know, which jobs are responding more than others based on my background and
right.
and everything. You know, the big corporates weren't working, so I was like, let's go for something smaller. And I think something that resonates, all you need is one yes. That's it. Out of 100 applications, it just takes one yes. And
right.
First five, or it could take 200. So lo and behold, I you know, submitted a job, an application for a small agency near Macy's on 36th Street. And I went in for the interview, interviewed with pretty much everyone there and then on that day. I remember it was so, so cold and I didn't know what to wear. I was in my Uggs and I changed out of my Uggs in the elevator going up, you know, so I was all professional. And they ended up offering me the job, you know, within a day or two. And I started within a few days. So, you know, 3-4 weeks prior, I was literally sitting crying in front of Macy's on Christmas, you know, just thinking, like, God, this is not what I expected, to be unemployed and in a job that really, really suited me and has really formed the basis for the rest of my career so far. So it did work out, but it was 5 months. I think it was like day 118 out of day 120 that I needed to get the job. So yeah, cut it tight, but made it in the end.
Well, isn't it interesting how, I think it's something you just said, is that you changed your strategy in a sense. You were your informational interviews were with a lot of big companies. So in a way you had an in, which was great. And truly you got a job offer and they were trying to do everything they could at HBO to keep you, to get you, and but because of the legal, it didn't work out.
Yeah.
And so in your case, going to a small, you know, the I don't want to call it red tape, but for the lack of, you know, making this a much bigger conversation, sometimes, I mean, I felt like I've worked at small companies, I worked at big companies, and some of the beauty of working at a smaller company is that you don't have all the layers that you need to go through with a big company. And it makes sense at a big company, it needs to be there. Yeah. I get why they do it. In this case, it's disappointing you didn't get that. But as you said, you ended up falling into a place which has set the tone for where your career is at now, and you've been doing extremely well. So yeah, that is a beautiful thing. Now, I think as we're talking all this, what would you say that a lot of, I think, our listeners are our parents, and, you know, hey, do they want to move overseas? Perhaps. And some of this does apply. And in fact, a lot of it could apply. Obviously, depending on your life situation, you've got to figure it out for your whole family versus if it's just you and you're young and can, you know, work in a bar and live off cereal and milk, which, by the way, I think some of us still, you know, when we're too busy, live off cereal and milk. But why would you tell some parents that they should let their kid move overseas? What do you think the benefits are?
Yeah. So I suppose even, you know, kids moving away to college, right? Like they could be going from the East Coast to the West Coast, which technically the same country, but it's a huge change. And for me going to England, you know, same thing, different country. It's not far geographically, but it's still a really big move. I would say it was in me, like my parents always supported it. I think my mom was definitely like, she would rather have me stay just for me to be closer to her. But I think it was always from her, it's like, whose benefit is that for? Is it for Katie's or is it for mine? So I think it's understanding the motivations for why sometimes in the first place. Like I know people ask me, would I move again? And it's like my motivations now, I would be very conscious of thinking about why that would be, you know, like, is there something missing in my life here that I think will be replaced by moving away? Or, you know, what is it that you're looking for? Obviously that sense of adventure and meeting new people is really interesting. So it just depends. As you said, it just depends on your situation. But my parents have always been supportive, I suppose, because my dad left home at like 16 to move to England to work. And then, so he's always had that experience of going away, and he's gone back, you know, and lived in Northern Ireland. So it's, I think he got it. He knew the feeling of, you know, wanting to see more of the world and be open to it. I think for me, one of the biggest things that it's taught me is tolerance and the openness and the diversity that's out there in the world. Like, it's okay staying in our own little environment that we've always been used to. And for some people, that is perfect, you know, and that's, it's not that it's, I don't like using the word enough, because it's not like it's not enough for me. It's just, you want something different. Like, that's not what you want. You just want something different. It's not more or less, it's just different. So for me, it was the diversity in people, the diversity in opinions. You know, it was a very interesting political time to be in America. So it was really interesting for me to hear both sides, to be exposed to that. So lots of really interesting conversations at work, and personally, just to see that. I think working in the bars, you saw people from, you know, other parts of the world who didn't stand an even chance as me. You know, like, I walked in and I got a job as a hostess in a bar, probably because I'm Irish and a girl. Other people don't have that opportunity. So that was really important for me to see, that it's like that openness of sometimes the unfairness that exists out there, and to just be aware of it and to see people and to see that. It's not like I'll ever be able to change that altogether, but it's just to be aware of that. So I think in that sense, and then tolerance is an interesting one, because through living in England and Dublin and then New York, roommates, living with other people that are not your family is one of the best things that you can do to learn tolerance and patience, and, you know, just see the way that other people live. And you don't have to live like them, you know, you do not, if they're not super tidy and you are, whatever, but that it's really just seeing things from other people's point of view. So for me, it's the diversity in people that you meet, and it just opens your eyes. Even if you go back to, like, I'm back in Ireland now, but those learnings and that the exposure that I got over there is still with me today. And I think it helps you get a good perspective on situations as well, because you've heard other people's opinions that sometimes are so different to yours, but that's okay. It's to really understand their point of view. And then I think the tolerance is great, just because you're always going to work with people you don't necessarily like or come from the same background of. And okay, you don't have to live with them and share a bathroom with them, but you do have to share a lot of time with them and sometimes space. So just being comfortable in that and knowing that has been amazing. So, and sorry, just on your final point about keeping in touch with the communication, I think obviously communication when I was there was great, right? We had FaceTime, WhatsApp calls, all of that. I don't really think that technology has changed much. We just use Zoom a lot more from a work standpoint. But I think it's just the openness in communication. And I was super, super lonely when I was there. And it's only really when I came home after like 2 years that I really realized how lonely I was, because I couldn't really understand why I wasn't happy at times in New York. You know, this is well beyond the job. This is into the summer. And, you know, when you really start to think about, do I stay or do I go? And I really couldn't understand, you know, what is it that it wasn't right. And for me, it was loneliness. You know, so it can be hard and the homesickness there. So I think it's just open lines of communication. Being able to say that, you know, now it's easy for me to look back and say it, but it's not that I couldn't admit it at the time. I don't think I really realized it. So I think it's just being there. Regular trips home is great. Obviously, Australia is difficult, but yeah, the more that you can get home, New York never felt too bad. They fly to Ireland several times a day, loads of different airlines. So you knew no matter what happened, yes, it's going to cost, but you could get home that day. There's a lot of peace of mind in that as well. So I think it's just the communication element, you know, like if you're close, yeah, and I'm sure, you know, I know with your son, if you're thinking of he ever moved away, it's just that communication element and just hearing them and sometimes having the conversations with you, like my dad did, you know, are you staying or going? He's not telling me what to do, but to just ask them the right questions so that really they come to their own realization about, is this the right thing for me or who am I really doing this for?
I think so, that's a huge point. And you know, right now my son's too young to be thinking about this, but as he's growing up and mm-hmm. as parents, you know, we're told we're supposed to let go. It's just so hard is helping them become independent thinkers. And so asking the questions, I love to give advice. So it's easy for me to jump in and be like, oh, this is what I would do, or obviously said differently than that. But to have an arsenal of questions is great, because sometimes it doesn't come naturally when your heart's so invested. Like I can come up with a bunch of interview questions like a journalist here for you or for the next person. But as a parent, I'm quick to like want a mama bear. And again, my kid's at a different age. I hope that I grow as he's growing. But I love that advice, because it's as worried as I could see myself getting if I think that my son might have any twinge of unhappiness or feeling lonely. Yeah, I think we know from whomever those parenting books or just wise people that have done this before us, is that trying to help our kids figure out the answers but not doing it for them is really wise. So Katie, thank you so much. This has been amazing hearing your story, getting your tidbits along the way. I think it's relevant and it resonates whether you are somebody who is moving overseas across the country or even just like you were talking about your experience going off to college. Like a lot of this, you know, obviously the visa stuff isn't necessarily relevant, but many of the nuggets of information are. So I want to end with how I always end, is playing the grateful game. And for those of you who are new to me, I end each episode playing what my son and I coined the grateful game. When he was 9 years old, I came home from a speaking engagement with a gratitude journal. And, you know, they were the rage then. They continue to be, I think, today as well. But we crawled into bed, we took notes, and we stayed up way too late talking about gratitude. I knew that there was something there because he was engaged. I also knew he probably wanted to stay up really late. But it just didn't work for us because he was staying up late with the light on. So what we did is we just turned the light off, and every night we would talk about what we're grateful and why in that day. And what I found is that when you start a habit and you do it regularly, your brain starts to think that way.
Yeah.
And so what I found is as time went on, Kyle and I, my son, would come home and be like, oh my gosh, I got to tell you something that happened today. It was really exciting. I'm really grateful for. And we focused on the day-to-day and why that's important. And what I found going through my own challenges in life, with many of you who know, I'm a 2-time breast cancer survivor. I'm living with stage 4 disease. And by the way, not every day is easy. And many times I can find a little something that makes me smile. Does it cure my cancer? No. But it might put me in a better mood, which helps me get through the day. And so now I'm asking you, Katie, just tell us. We don't have to banter back and forth, you like Kyle and I used to do. I need to get more answers than you. I just want to hear one thing to get us in that moment of gratitude. Like it's a mindful practice, something in the last 24 hours that you're grateful for and why.
Something that I'm grateful for and why would be my determination. So I think too, that can be, you know, really felt through my time in New York. And it was something that really taught me, you know, I had to stay determined. I think you quoted a song lyrics when we were talking earlier, you know, about getting knocked down and get back up again. And it is that determination that gets you to do that. And I think it's super relevant in the last 24 hours because I'm currently training for a Hyrox, a fitness event in the new year. And it is not easy. And it's so easy to say, oh, I won't go to the gym today, or I won't work as hard, or I won't, you know, the easy option is to not do it or to, you know, take a day off. But I did it and I'm proud of myself for doing it nearly, you know, 6 days a week. So what I'm really grateful for is my determination that I stick to. And I think, as you said, it's a practice. So the more that you stay determined and the more you can overcome it, the easier it becomes over time. So yeah, very grateful for my determination.
Well, thank you. I love that story. And I love that, you know, as we're recording this, it's coming upon the new year. As we drop the episode, it will be 2024. And so we'll have to check back in, you know, maybe we do something, a TikTok together, right? Or just to see how it all went. But thank you, Katie. Thank you so much. And for the listeners out there, I hope that you have enjoyed the conversation, that you've learned a few things. If you have any questions, obviously you can reach out on Instagram. I'm Pretty Wellness. We always take questions. We always love your input. And thank you. Thank you, listeners, for being here along this journey. I'm here, we're here to hope that you have found something that can help you find joy during whatever journey you're going through in life. So thanks again, and bye for now, everyone. One more thing. I would be so grateful if you'd take a minute to rate, review, and subscribe. You leaving a review helps us with our podcast ranking. The higher we are ranked, the more people can discover our show. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm sending you lots of happiness and great health.